Tuesday, March 19th, CPERC meeting. Would you like to do roll call?
Jaime Cabrera.
Present.
Annabelle Nunez.
Present.
Kate Calhoun.
Here.
Martha Lemon.
Here.
We have a forum here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Item number two, approval of the legal action report and minutes from February 20th, 2024. Did you all have an opportunity to review these minutes and the law? Someone like to make a motion to approve?
I move to approve the minutes in the bar.
Second.
Okay. I'm Amadeo.
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez.
Aye.
Kate Calhoun.
Aye.
Martha Lemon.
Aye.
4-0.
Terrific. Okay, so we have some training. We've got the PNI training, so thank you for coming and teaching us.
Sure.
All new stuff. Thank you.
Can you set your expectations low?
And watch it. Never.
It'll be great.
Mimi, I apologize. I will email or make sure you get emailed the handout that I'm providing. So.
Yeah, yeah. No worries. Thank you.
So, basically, my name is Erica Straka. I'm currently assigned as a lieutenant. I recently was reassigned to our special victim section, but previous to that, I was assigned to Operations Division Midtown. And I was also assigned to be the project manager for the ODM PNI site. In Operations Division Midtown, our site was called the Grant and Algernon PNI. And PNI, what it stands for, is Place Network Investigations. I'm kind of curious, have you guys heard of it before, PNI? Okay, so PNI got its start probably back in 2021. And please correct me if I'm off on my dates, because honestly, I'm horrible with geography and history. It's just not my thing. I'm sorry, I know you love history. But anyway, so about 2021, the city of Tucson looked at the Place Network Investigations model as a way for us to really address gun crime violence in the city of Tucson. As you all can recall, we had one of our most historical years of homicides, and a lot of those were due to gun crime violence. So in looking for a way in which we could really, not just as a police department, but as a city, really combat this difficult issue, we looked at different places in the country that had a model that could help us to maybe look at. And Cincinnati was one of those places that was using Place Network Investigations. And it's based off a scientific approach to how to focus on the places in which you have the most gun crime violence. And one of the things that we know is that those places typically are small in nature, and there's typically one or a few individuals who are really responsible for the majority of those crimes. So if we can really identify who those people are and figure out what the places are that they go to, and then understand the social network that's underlying these people in the places and disrupt that, ultimately we can have a long-term sustainable impact on gun crime violence. In Tucson, we have three locations, not just ODM like I shared. We also have 7450 East 22nd, which is the Terra Lumisol Apartments. In our South Division, 6200 South Campbell was identified as a PNI location. And then, like I just spoke of, the Grant and Algernon was also identified as a PNI. As we started doing our deployments, we quickly realized that a lot of the place in which we found that we were having issues related to gun crimes related back to 2550 North Dodge, the Oasis Apartments. That really, for us, in my experience, is what drove sort of our investigations all kind of came back to that location. I say all that because it's, we can identify where the gun crimes are, but it really takes a city approach in order to really disrupt what's going on. And for us, the mayor and council have supported the P&I project, now going into year three. The mayor has come out along with the council to say that this is something that, as a city, with the city manager's direction and oversight, has really come to say that this is something that we have to do together as a team. So we have board meetings on the second Thursday of every month at our Westside Division at 1:30 in the afternoon. All the community is invited to this. And at those meetings, not only is it community members, but more importantly, it's department heads from all of the different city departments. So we have not just the police department. We've got the city managers typically at these meetings. We've got the head of, you know, the head of Parks and Rec, the head of Department of Transportation, Mobility. We've got all the different departments. Their leaders are there so we can all talk about these issues from the standpoint of, okay, as a police, we're going to investigate gun crimes. But what else is going on here? If we did a subhead, crime prevention through environmental design, and we look at this location, what things are missing, like, for instance, lighting. Maybe we need to beef up the lighting. Maybe the streets, there's some issues with the streets, or we need to implement some way in which to barricade or prevent people from traveling down a certain street that we find identify as being a contributing factor. So streets will come in and they'll help us on that end. In the case of Oasis that I indicated earlier, I shared that because we found that a lot of the individuals that are being placed there are through Section 8. So we went to Section 8 and we asked, like, hey, can you help us out with this? Because we're seeing that there's something going on here, but we can't quite identify why. What's the drawing part of a factor that's bringing people to Oasis? So Section 8 actually helped out a lot with just kind of identifying, you know, is it people that are actually with Section 8, or are there other factors that are contributing? And that was very helpful. Also, code enforcement. They're a real big part of helping us with some of these locations. And I'll give an example of the 7450 East 22nd. Section 8, along with the city attorney's office, have been just really important in helping us to address those locations. They have tons of code enforcement issues at the property, and we found that the property owner of Tara Luna Soul, he was not taking care of his property. So really, it was creating this sort of like there was not a management oversight. People are living in really disgusting, filthy apartments. How else to explain it? And so code enforcement came in and helped us and really put the pressure on, along with the city attorney's office, to really put pressure on the property owner. And they've had some really good success. Same with 6200 South Campbell. They got new management there, and they really assisted us with really tackling the problem people that were bringing some of these criminal elements onto the property that were really creating this unsafe living environment for their tenants. So getting property management involved is something we found to be very helpful. And we're doing that collectively with all of the city departments to really address the issues from a 360 standpoint, not just the police are solving the issue, but rather what else can we do to implement some like effective ways in which to have long-term positive outcomes. Another city department that we've really been utilizing to help us with this, and I'm going to probably end with this. Actually, I'm going to end with where the future sites are going to be, because we're in the process of trying to identify sites in Operations Division West, as well as another site in Operations Division South. But the Community Safety, Health, and Wellness, they've been really helping us as well to come in and step in and help when we're finding that individuals are just lacking services and they're really needing some outreach. So they've been helping us. Right now, currently, the board is looking at, they're reviewing several different locations. In the West Division, they're looking at three different places. They're looking at Fort Lowenstone, Fort Lowell and First, Broadway and Tool. And that what they did in order to try to, what they're doing, I should say, is that in order to determine what would be a location that would be termed a P&I site, they do, they get a bunch of data and they basically weigh it. And it's based off of gun-related crimes. So they'll give point systems to all the homicides, fatal shootings, part one violent incidents that are associated with gun crimes, and then all the remaining part one violent incidents. And then once they give that score, that kind of helps them to determine what locations would be ideal to consider as a PNI. They're leaving it up to the board for us to really come together, and I say we, but I'm no longer in the board. But leaving it up to the board and then as well all the department heads to really come together and try to strategize how they think they can really go into that area and have the most long sustainable outcomes for disrupting gun crime violence. But that's sort of where they're at right now. Anything to add about that, Captain, since this is going to affect you here pretty soon?
No. She mentioned about the way that we evaluated it. You may have heard the term part one crimes. Basically, that's an FBI classification. It just means the more violent of the types of crimes that you have. So usually death, murder, shooting, stabbing, those kinds of things. And basically, we got a culmination of all those incidents in a geographic area, added them up, came up with the statistic, and compared those with other areas in the city. That's how they came up with the top three for that particular West Side division.
Thank you, Lieutenant. A couple of questions. You mentioned one location downtown. Is there anything else located downtown? Is there a...
Okay. So the locations that they're looking at are...
The Broadway and Tool?
Broadway and Tool, yes.
Is there one that's already been identified in the downtown area?
No. So what they did was they took all of the statistics and they came up with these. They basically weighted the amount of crimes that are occurring. And the area of Broadway Tool, they took a quarter mile circumference around that area, and they found that that particular location had a high number of gun-related crimes. The other two locations are Fort Bull and Stone and Fort Bull and First.
Okay.
So and it's based on the numbers, basically.
Sure. You invite the businesses to participate? So if, for example, in the future, Broadway and Tool's been identified, will you invite downtown businesses?
Yes.
It's open to the public as a public meeting to begin with, but
okay.
Right now this was one of the areas. I can't guarantee if it will or will not be selected, but the unique thing about that particular one is it's the RTC area as well as the bar areas. So it actually has more personal-person violence than gun violence compared to the other areas. And these groups are more focused on gun violence itself, but also it includes if somebody stabbed a person, that's still horrendous. It just doesn't happen to add up statistically, specifically what they're looking for. So downtown, with I would use the term the bar scenes and the RTC, that was more hand-to-hand combat where multiple people fight, which equals a more violent crime, but it's not necessarily gun-driven. And so that's why they kind of overshadowed it. That's where sometimes the statistics actually get a little bit ahead of what we were trying to prove. And so we went back and reviewed all that data and said, show me how we came up with that specific number. And it was really more person-to-person fights rather than a gun being shot.
Okay.
So, even though it did occur sometimes, but it was certainly not to the degree of the other areas.
RTC?
The Ronstadt Transit Center, the bus station.
Yeah. Okay. So we're, in my business, we see a lot of folks who are coming into our brand new parking garages and breaking into parking garages. Our vehicles in the parking garage. So, and I don't know how often those are reported, whether it's an employee or if it's just somebody who's attending the event. So
P&I is really focusing on gun crime.
Or guns.
So
you're
really looking at the guns associated with the crime.
Not just crime in general.
Yeah. So that's really how they figure out which locations would be best suited to by this model.
Okay.
Well, gun and stabbings are like weapons.
The definition would be gun crimes plus violent crimes.
And robberies are included in that.
Yeah, but not...
Robberies. So I can speak a little bit on this. So I was a lieutenant in this area, specifically Broadway and Tool, back in 2021, prior to me landing my other assignment. And that's, I don't know if you guys recall, but that's when we had a lot of murders in the parking structures right there. And so I have a feeling that violent summer of 2021 probably triggered P&I for you guys. Because of that, we instituted the downtown violence reduction deployments that are on Friday and Saturday nights. So I think that's curbed a lot of the violence.
But I think that's probably what triggered that.
Yeah, she's very closely with the murders over there. The time frame that we did were actually 2022. And so it was still violence, but there weren't any murders associated specifically to the data collected that led to this being the location. Let me clarify. Downtown, there were no murders associated to it. It was guns being shot. You probably remember around Cobra Arcade for a time, there were shots being fired, but no one died from those things. It was more either they were leaving or shooting up in the air as the cars were driving away. But she's very much correct that the parking garages around that area had those singular incidents. The unique thing for this, and again, I try not to overshadow it with, it's the network, and networking mean who is the group that's driving this. Not downtown, it's usually more people drive in or pop in, but they're not associated necessarily to a corner of a street. Now, some people are, but not directly, versus a neighborhood where you say, this is a drug house, this is an apartment, that is always a problem. And that's what the drive, really, that's what they call it, place network investigations. You find a place, you're trying to identify the network, and you do an investigation to say, what's the best way to disrupt this? Sometimes it's simple eviction. Sometimes it could be incarceration. Sometimes you may say, like Erica had mentioned, was you may have a slumlord sort of scenario where you're going, just by bringing them into compliance, they will stop renting to people who are paying with drugs and prostitution or something else, and that solves that area problem. But it's not necessarily meaning you're getting rid of the person out of the city. They just no longer work in that particular area. And that's kind of the different strategies. The goal is a long-term solution. And the main part is that it should never be only crime and law enforcement enforcement. It may be as simple as calling the right people and saying, let's get code enforcement out, and they're going to condemn this building, and it should never have had become a drug den to begin with. So that's not really an arrest as much as it is, we're going to charge you money to, we're going to charge you money to make sure that it gets fixed. So that's kind of how a lot of these areas got worked out.
If you look at the piece of paper that I gave y'all, it actually talks a little bit about how we go about trying to identify the different places and how, and then our job is trying to figure out how are these places connected to one another. So there's a crime spot, you know, the place where the crime happens, but there might be a corrupting spot where maybe the people are associated with this, they all kind of come together and they talk about it, and there's comfort locations where people like that maybe are associated with these crimes, they all hang out. So we try to figure out where this is, and then we try to disrupt that. And that really requires the community to help us with identifying that. We're not going to know, we are not going to be the ones doing it necessarily always know that, whereas the neighborhoods, businesses can absolutely chime in and say, hey, you know what, you guys, we've been having an issue. These guys are all hanging out in our parking lot after hours. You know, the hookah lounge is a really good example of some of that, too. But to go back to your question about the businesses, so for us at Grant and Algernon, we absolutely went around to all the businesses and just talked to them and let them know about the meetings. We invited them to attend. But then we also tried to ask them to be helping us with some events that where we could host something that would be a little bit more positive for the community. So like VASA, like at Grant and Algernon, they would allow us to do monthly recruiting events there. Mm-hmm. Walmart allows us to do like a donut, you know.
Yeah.
Donut with a cop is what we do.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just those types of things where we're trying to get everybody involved. And then on top of it, just having the neighborhoods to actually report to us in a way that they feel safe enough to let us really know what's going on where they don't have to fear retaliation.
So this program has been going on for a minute, 2 years or so. And you've identified spots. Are these spots forever on your radar, or what?
Good. That is such a good question, because we asked the same thing. We were like, well, so do we have to always be patrolling this or looking at this one place? What we've been told is until you can really identify how this crime spot is related to why it's always happening the way it is, like, for instance, Oasis, we continue to see issues and spikes in crime there. What we've been able to identify is that if we don't have the property owner helping to assist us with this, we're going to continue to have that. So that's going to always be on our radar. However, like 6200 South Campbell, they're almost considered maintenance stage, if not even a PNI anymore, because they've been able to assist
not only the Tucson Police Department, but all the other departments to really identify which tenants were causing the biggest issue, and then they just revoked, you know, they evicted them and said, you're no longer welcome here, basically. But, so they've been able to really do a good job of really helping to clean that whole situation up for that location. Tierra Luna Sol, we are actively working with the city attorney's office and the property owners to look for ways to improve, the safety there. And that too looks like it's getting to this maintenance stage where we may not have to consider it a canary.
So for the folks that are evicted, troublemakers that are evicted, is anything else happening with those particular people, or are they just being kicked down to the next community who then has to deal with a new?
Well, if there's a reason why we would find them, like, in violation of a crime, they're going to be arrested, right? We don't necessarily want to go about evicting everybody because that adds to the housing issue that we're having in Tucson. I don't know. I don't really have a good answer for that. I don't know, maybe some of my partners here in the room might have a better answer. But it is just to validate your point, that has definitely been something we've considered, is that we don't want to necessarily evict all the people who are causing the problems, because where are they going to go? Because they're probably going to have a hard time getting, you know, qualifying and actually finding residency somewhere else. So that's why we're having a holistic approach. This is like why we kind of wanted to mention community safety, health and safety wellness, because they're really helping us with not just us taking a law enforcement approach, but doing some preventative, proactive, like, intersection with these families to try to introduce some services and some resources that can actually help maybe start to dissuade the person from going down this route. What I can share with you in my P&I, in the year that we were doing proactive P&I, we actually were able to remove 54 guns out of that Grant Merritt Algernon area from June 1st, 2022 to May 31st, 2023. And we also took 10 guns from prohibited possessors. And for me and my team at the time, I'm like, you guys, we can't even understand what kind of a preventative, proactive, you know, result this is going to have long term. Just being able to get in there, identify the people who are armed, and really, from a law enforcement standpoint, you know, make sure that we're holding those people accountable and actually find some consequences there. It's been really good.
Sounds awesome. Given the limitations of, you know, the guns, you can't destroy them. It's my understanding, but anyway, with it sounds like an awesome program.
Yeah. It seems some very positive results, yeah, especially with her team and on the east side as well. That's why we're continuing to make it, is we've seen the positive results. It's now, and it's actually grown. Like you mentioned, you haven't seen a manager in the office or in the building with us, with other department heads. You know, I think that speaks just volumes right there, that how often you have a city manager and six or eight other directors able to sit in a room and say, what's the next step? And I expect this to be done by next month. That really shows you the seriousness that the city takes.
Well, I recall Chief Hall being very involved in sort of the gun violence. Is this sort of a part of...
Actually, he was one of the individuals that helped find the project idea and bring it into fruition for the city. Still is. He's still over
this year. Cool.
Any other questions, concerns? Invite you guys to attend one of the meetings. It really is. It's a good experience just to see what the city is trying to do to disrupt the gun crime violence.
Thanks for the village. Thank you.
It does. Just on the horizon.
Thank you, Lieutenant. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right, so.
I'm going to be Carlos, right?
Carlos, yes. Mitch. Go back to your seat. I couldn't see the name there. All right, so item number four, report from the chairperson. It is with heavy heart that I let you all know that Bill Ricketts had passed away a few weeks ago. I had the opportunity to spend some time with his wife and his children, so they're pretty devastated. He's definitely going to be missed. He worked with the city for quite some time. Prior to working for the city, he worked for Marriott Food Services, which is where I met him about 30 years ago. So it's really sad. So I have yet to speak to Ward 5, so I don't know if anyone has chatted with Ward 5, but it sounds like you all are aware about Phil's passing, so... another disappointment is Martha is moving to the county.
Yep.
In May. And I don't believe she can be continue on as CFARB. Is that correct? Does she have to be a city employee?
Yes, she does. She needs to be a city resident.
City resident.
It's word specific, but she has to be a city resident.
Go across the street, like Elaine, and gets her
100-yard delivery.
Yeah, so we are going to be down another CFAR member, which is unfortunate. So I appreciate everything you've done for us for so many years. So you'll be missed, but I feel your pain as I've got my parents moving in with me. So, yeah.
Yep.
Yes. And another thing I just want to mention, Tucson Police Department, Tucson Fire Department. Oh.
Yeah, just from city up here, city. Is this Ward 6? Which was Ward 6?
This is, yep.
Because you're losing this council member. So it would be, gonna find out who's gonna get selected, then you can work on it.
Okay. I don't know if anyone was at the Tucson Police Department, Tucson Fire Department hockey game on Saturday.
I was there. I thought
you ate. Thank you. TPD got one score on the board, so
go off.
So, but they made it. They made a score, which is great. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun, and annually the Tucson Roadrunners host the fire department and the police department, and they do a scrimmage game. So we've got more individuals with the police department who are actually playing. So it's nice to see more people come out because the fire department, you know. So
is it a fundraiser or is it just a...
Yes, actually it's both. It's a fundraiser for both police and fire. And it's really, the event has grown exponentially. I mean, we went from 200 people from the first event, about 400 the second event last Saturday. There was approximately 800 people there. So, yeah, so it's a lot of fun.
Cool.
It's a lot of fun. So next year, around that time, put it on your calendar to come out and support the red and the blue. So, good job, TPD. I'm happy you guys made it. Cool. Yes. So item number 5, call to the audience. At this time, the community may address the board with their concerns. The board may not address the specific concern at this meeting. However, the board may, at its discretion, make a future agenda item, at which time there can be a discussion. Community members are asked to address the board, not a specific member, and each person is limited to 3 minutes. Item number 6, TPD review of investigations. In accordance with Section 10A-88F of the Mayor Council mandate, the board may only review those charges specified in the investigation in order to comment on the fairness and thoroughness of the investigation and to report any concerns regarding that investigation to those specific in the mandate. So our first case is 22-0206. This incident occurred on May 31st, 2022, and it occurred, was a Motor West unit. And the allegations included unprofessionalism, general orders, rudeness, And it appears as if there was a suspension that occurred as a result of this investigation. It's my case. That's my name.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm not going to be able to weigh in on any of the cases. I had issues getting into the files last night, and now it's resolved, but I didn't have a chance to review them today.
Okay. Thank you for letting me.
So the only question I have definitely looks like it was a thorough investigation. What's the status of Detective Peralta today?
So Detective Peralta actually still works for me. So he worked for me when he was a motor, and then he transitioned because he was in the process of promotion and assigned to traffic investigations. Since then, we have had no issues with him. He's currently on a condition of continued employment, so he's under a contract. So if any subsequent convicts you can hear, we do have to actually review them. And, you know, very thorough, we have to wait. We'll go to Office of Professional Standards first, and then they will give it to his chain of command to review. But I think he learned a lot from this lesson, and haven't had any issues with him since.
Yeah, I kind of thought just reading it, it's probably a better fit than a detective.
Great.
Because I don't get how you guys don't lose your minds on patrol every day. So,
I can work that well for that one.
All right. That's all I have for that one. And it looks like it was a thorough and fair
investigation. Hi, Meg. Do you have any comments on this investigation?
No, I do not. And I wasn't aware that I was, because I had done my oath, so I didn't think that I was gonna, you know, be at this meeting because I haven't submitted. So I didn't read anything, so I'm gonna be abstaining from voting for the next three cases.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So in that case, I did review the documents. I also reviewed the video, and I can see the frustration in any officer when someone else is in front of you with the camera taping you. I know I can understand how that would get annoying. But I do agree with you, Martha, on the fair and thoroughness of the investigation. So would you like to make a motion and I can second?
I will make a motion.
And I will second.
To find 22-0206 to be found fair and thorough. Second.
I'm going to read all the names of these.
Okay.
Jaime Barrio. Annabelle Nunez.
Abstain.
Kay Calhoun.
Aye.
Martha Lemon.
Aye.
Jennifer.
Okay. So OPS case number 22-0412. This incident happened on September 26, 2022 in the Operation West Division. Martha, if you're reviewing this case, you may see some of the body-worn camera was very similar to the case that we reviewed last month, which was 22-0381. And the complainant indicated that there was an incomplete investigation. And apparently, excuse me just a second, violation of general orders. Incomplete investigation. And that was it.
It's similar, it's the same case, right?
It's a different case because it was a different complaint.
But it's the same circumstance. It's the same incident.
Same situation. Order,
yes.
Same location, same time.
All right.
Lessons.
Also, thought I was going crazy.
Just somebody else complained.
Somebody else complained. Okay. So the only question I have about this, since we did previously find it to be fair and thorough, is there an uptick in citizen recording of officer investigations, and I anticipate we'll be seeing these individuals again.
I will say there are community members who find this is how they choose to pass their time. And I certainly can't say it's decreased. It's either even with or possibly an uptick. It's a quiet week, so I'll count that right now. But I can't say that it's certainly going away. And I think with social media and the way that it's being utilized, I think sometimes we take for granted that largely this is for likes and thumbs ups and such on social media rather than the documentation of a situation, because people are prompting these engagements. This isn't, I want to catch the or watch the police and how they interact. This is literally people prompting a face-to-face confrontation, as you mentioned, as you read. And that's what we're seeing more and more of, is because people are finding that that's how they get their name out there. But I think there's consequences to it. I think hopefully we'll see some other changes with this kind of decrease. Just haven't seen it yet.
It just seems like an opportunity to try to get the monetization and whatnot. I'm sure it's an opportunity. But the social media, yeah, it'd be interesting to really dive deep into some legislative requests to get the social media companies to, like, say anything that has to do with, you know, drawing up what the parameters are, but certainly trying to draw the line where it's, can get away from that, baiting and prompting solely for the work.
Certainly, I appreciate the term. I think baiting is the best way of describing it. This is not the documentation where people say we want transparency from the police. This is someone picking the fight and wanting to see just how far you can go and how close. We as officers will allow somebody to put a camera in your face. And in this particular case, they were investigating a shooting where someone lost a family member. And yet they, officers on the scene, limited resources they are, have to turn their attention to this individual who is not only dealing with that scenario, but also prompting other people in an apartment complex to come out because of their children in view of the way they're screaming outside their windows and things like that. So I appreciate working with someone.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it goes beyond monetization. For a lot of these folks, it's also socialization. And that's their social world. As they're filming, they're seeing live feeds from all the people signing up as attaboy or screw the cops or whatever they're saying. So it's a whole social network with folks that probably wouldn't have such a large social network if they were together in person. It's a relatively finite number of people locally. I'm familiar with most of them. And what happens is, if they're not getting that, as it's about baiting, they're not getting that police response, you go somewhere else. It's of no interest unless the police buy into it. And that's the TPD's credit. There's a significant amount of training that goes out to say how to deal with these people. In other words, don't buy into being baited. And so if they don't get the response from the police, they're going to go somewhere else where they can. So the ones that I usually see, I think I'm just 7 or 8 off the top of my head, I check them pretty regularly. They've moved on to other areas in the country to go with some of their friends in Texas or north of Arizona. So they're not here, at least that group, not as much. Certainly.
They were transient. They weren't necessarily long-term residents of our community.
No, they are, but they travel because that's part of their social world.
Okay.
So they become friends with somebody else that may be in Texas, and they all head out to Texas together. I mean, it's
very calculated and strategic, and it's interesting. They probably are listening on scanners, and then they get the mob mentality starts to kick in, and it's the whole thing. Yeah, that's what it is. And they feed off each other. It's an energy thing. Psychological. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The police department, are you evolving like some of your training based upon some of the trends with regards to social media?
We do. Okay. I do think it's important to mention, too, that the legalities of them being able to film, even though it's with the intent to be provocative, to bait, they still, in most cases, have the availability to do so, right? That's why in the last month we mentioned this was a very unique situation because the sidewalk is where they were, which is totally legal, but they're also outside of an apartment that's 5 feet from this legal sidewalk. So the design and some other factors had to be taken into account. And again, as officers were dealing with a death scene, a death location, and family members that were resulting from that. They have to triage that very quickly of how far we let this happen, you have people that are saying get them off the property and everything else. So we do evolve those trainings every once in a while, as much as we can, especially the more we learn. You know, you kind of run into a situation and you went, well, I've got to be honest with you, did not think that portion of that would be what we would be talking about today. But we do educate our staff on that. We do online trainings as well as in person, and largely the west side because it also includes downtown as well. Not, it's not limited to, but I would say we have a larger showing for many people in that case. So that's where the trainings come from.
Also, from a civilian perspective, I can tell you, I teach at the academy, as I was out from today, just the CSO Academy last week was a recruit, and it's something I bring up as well. What to expect with some of these folks, really what their intentions are. And so they're really receiving some good training all around. Plus, the other thing that's happening now, the courts are starting to rule on some of these cases where they hadn't previously. And some of these guys are losing at the level, and so they're moving on to where they have a better shot at creating a ruckus. It's this is just not a fertile place for them, as fertile as other places.
Well, it seems like, I mean, you think of it as like the whatever law, statute, whatever it is, probably isn't the right term, but like, you know, we can't be on fire in the theaters, right? So, like, to what degree could that potentially be the case? Like, you have to repeat. Complain it, right? Because I don't know who ended up issuing the complaint on this one. And the fact that we're seeing that again, you know, I don't know, do they come to you? I mean, is this group of people then also put in the complaints with?
I can tell
your besties?
I can tell you what their favorite colors are. I've been fitting what they have for breakfast.
I mean, there should be a statute of limitation on what they can, you get 3 a year. Anyway, I'm just riffing here. But anyway, fascinating.
Thank you. I'm going to move to find 23-0073. Very thorough.
Second.
Oh, excuse me. 22-0412 to be found there in Girl.
Second.
I would love it.
Yes. And the Bowman and the ancestor. Kate Cavalin?
Aye.
Martha Lemon?
Aye. Okay, terrific. All right, our last case is 23-0073. This happened midtown. Allegations were use of force, striking. The complainant indicated that his teeth were knocked out. We've got photos, video. His teeth were still on his head.
The only question I have about this, because clearly videos and reports, TPD did not knock his teeth out. Is there any, and granted this individual was referred to mental health court, so there's probably other stuff going on, but the question I have is there any recourse for TPD to penalize vexatious complainants? Is there anyone or are there people who just complain, just a complaint, and knowing that a process has to be followed? And I saw that, yeah, they do have to sign and affirm that they're telling the truth, but do you guys, have you all seen multiple complaints from an individual, and what do you do about it?
So I can answer that, and maybe the way as well. Judy Wakefield, the new internal affairs trainer, I was going to reveal that later on. But so yeah, when they do file a complaint, they have to attest the complaint is legitimate, and that they won't provide false information, or else they could be arrested for providing false information. Although we can make the arrest in, you know, several circumstances. We use it very sparingly because we don't want to create that chilling effect of the community coming to police. So I mean, we do what we have to widen that to get people in to make complaints if they are legitimately receive poor service from the police. I'll just leave it at that. So that was part of the decision in this particular case.
advisor to everybody that makes a complaint, that you can make a complaint, but you are subject to arrest or sent for a false reporting. That passed 2 years ago. And I firmly believe, and I'm close enough to retirement, so maybe, but I firmly believe that that was done in order to stop people to complain. And I, as the AER training, I believe that's also what was behind that. And as you pointed out, but no side effect that I see, but, you know, to answer your question, there are plenty of people with mental illness that will report 20, 30 times that they've been hacked. And, you know, is that a false report? No, they're unintentionally misrepresenting it. They believe they're hacked. So are these cases that TPD will get and say, oh, crap. I mean, everyone's looked at is maybe one time it's going to be true. But there are cases that you tend to just, oh, well, here's just another one from, you know, Sam Smith. But they believe it. So I don't know many people that have made complaints knowing that they're full of complaints or trying to get an officer in trouble without there being something behind a complaint. So I'm not sure if that's what you would ask or not. But, yeah, there are plenty that come in that are just...
You have a... I mean, when you take a consultation or whatever, somebody's going directly to you and you kind of go through, we have to fill this out. Have you seen people kind of get to that statement where it says they could be, and then they're like, oh.
It's the first statement they hear before they begin. No, it's never stopped.
They just all in.
Again, it's the false reporting requires intentional misrepresentation. Not just misrepresentation, but doing it intentionally. And you know, how many of these people, they believe they're being hacked. It's a pretty sad thing, for example. So the intention of misrepresenting, probably not, and that's very difficult, and it's one of the reasons I've never seen anybody charged with false reporting. I mean, maybe it's happened, but I haven't seen it.
Something similar yet different. I mean, if I was to drive through a wash and there's signs there, wouldn't TFD cite me if they had to come and rescue me?
I don't know if they do. I know there's the law. So
we have cited, like Captain Wakefield says, it's sparingly. Right, when you've got the mental health aspect, it makes it really hard and hurt. But there are some that don't have that on board and have created very lengthy and extensive investigations that require a lot of department resources, and so there have been a few in my couple times in OPS that I recall, but very, like you said, we use it sparingly.
Okay. So you also don't discourage.
Yeah.
Got it.
Well, there are plenty of cases that, you know, behind closed doors, the investors get, you know, I wish they had cited.
Well, this one in particular, I mean, how much time and effort was spent on
identify as a specific group that does that kind of thing. It's the same folks you're talking about with the cameras. I mean, mm-hmm. they know what they're doing, and that's a game to them as opposed to, you know, listening to a tortured mind make a police complaint. Yeah. For whatever reason they're outside.
Okay. MP3 for three? Sure. I move to find case 23-0073 to be found fair and thorough.
Second. Anastasia? Annabelle Nunes? Kate Calhoun?
Aye.
Martha Lennon?
Aye.
Thank you. So item number 7, in accordance with the provisions of the state open public meeting law, these are items that are listed on the agenda in order to allow TPD to present a brief summary of current events pursuant to provisions of ARS Section 38-431-02. The board may not propose, discuss, deliberate, or take action at this meeting on the matter or any updates unless specifically the matter is properly noticed for legal action at a subsequent meeting. So, A, TPD updates regarding events and developments.
So you have, sorry, Lieutenant Strapka talk about place network investigations, and so we're looking at the fourth location. That'll be decided by April, so we're continuing that, which has had great success. And then we're currently planning for NCAA. And so Captain Doggett is actually overseeing that. So even though it sounds like the semifinal, the final will take place in, is it Glendale? Mm-hmm. Glendale this year, we'll still always have the folks here. So that requires a lot of resources. At least we noticed that game that we'll be playing. So that's been in planning since January, actually.
They're in my lead A's and my brackets.
Okay.
You see
how thirsty. I'm just happy that they don't play on Easter, because the options were the 30th and 31st.
Oh.
So they do play the 30th.
Ooh.
I know. So that's what we're working on right now, plus election season. So there's several protests, as you know, being downtown that have normally factors, I think, one going on right now. So, yeah, it feels like at least a couple of weeks, and that, I imagine, will just pick up. So we've just been planning everything around those. That's all I have.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Yep, Captain Jimmy Waite, I guess the cat's out of the bag.
Yeah.
I'm the new officer. Professional standards captain, succeeding Tim Reese. I've been on the market for 25 years. This is actually my second rotation through internal affairs. I was there about 10 years ago as a sergeant. I actually worked Chief Kazmar, who was then Lieutenant Kazmar over the office, and Deputy Chief Monica Biff, who was a sergeant in the office as well. So obviously I'm not in the cool club. But happy to be back in internal affairs. Questions to go there. It's a great assignment. I definitely look forward to working with the individual in that assignment, seeing what I can do to make it better.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, Office of the Independent Police Auditor.
Martha, you're going when? May?
May is my last meeting.
So your quorum is going to be 2. At that point, unless you get somebody on real quick to get the hours in. And that's going to be the sticking point. So even if they get moving, they got you. It's reality, folks.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about it for a while. But
here it is.
And you can blame Martha on it. All right. For those of you still around, and it will not be Martha, in October, NACOL, the National Association for Civilian Oversight and Law Enforcement, will have their annual meeting here in Tucson this year, October 13th through the 17th, Sunday through Thursday. And if anybody's interested, let me know, and we'll get some passes for that. It's going to be held at the Starvet, and very nice accommodations, same place Annabelle went last time. She enjoyed that idea as well. And so if you're interested, let me know. Get the NACOL and city manager to work that out that you can attend. Okay. So one of the things TPD has been readying itself for any type of crowd control that might need to be done for the NCAA tournament. They're pretty cool, those folks, and they're not right.
There's
mobile skills
for us.
That's me.
Remember when you went to
training? Yes, I'm content with you. He abused me.
He's a great role player. So I'm the commander that oversees Mobile Field Force and Rapid Response Team, which is our community network team. So, like, right, the big sticks and shields. Mm-hmm. I have that. That's Mobile Field Force. And then our officer friendlies who, woo, go U of A.
And I like being a bad guy.
Yes, he does.
I've pitched role playing many times. I'll pitch it again. We get to spend 3 hours saying F you to the police and then thank you for it, which is really an odd thing that happened. That is kind of the truth. I enjoyed myself and played enough, as you just heard. I still have some bruises, but I did it to myself. I also, they look for a volunteer to be arrested, and there's one exercise where they drive up to your car and they practice in it. Extricate somebody from a drone and they join it up, they put some card over the piles out, they grab it, grab the back of the card. They raise my hand. They looked at me like, no, you don't want to do that. And I said, yeah, you. So I'm okay. I survived it. I'm a little disappointed in a video of that going around the office and it's there. It really was. That was kind of embarrassing.
When we book the presidential candidates, why don't you come over to my place and have a good time?
It was good training. It really was. And you can tell that they put it very seriously and they're training all kinds of different scenarios because you never know. And so I'm glad they're doing that. They look like they did a good job to me. I had a complaint just a couple of days ago from a young man whose father had an encounter with TBD. The father is in his late 70s, has significant dementia. And in the course of this encounter with the police, the father had wandered away and turned out that he was trespassing. Police went out and had to deal with the situation. He acted in such a way as to, one of the officers thought he was being a little too aggressive, but a female officer was there. In fact, he was being aggressive. The way it was perceived by the male officer who needed to detain him, and that included basically he sustained a significant gash on his head, mentioned a cold, everything was done right. But the reason I bring it up is I just talked to them the day before yesterday, and today the son came in and was able to watch the body on the camera that quickly with a sergeant from OPS and with a lieutenant from OPS, and had his questions answered, and heard the police perspective, and then met with Chief Casmore and Chief Prieto afterwards. And as a result of those meetings, we could have had somebody who's extremely hostile to the police and caused additional problems by other folks that they know. Came away and I just got an email from him. He is satisfied there was no police wrongdoing and is not going to be filing a complaint. So I think TBD did the right thing, and I appreciated that by opening themselves up, allowing him to see that body work camera, preparing as quickly as they did, because you know, you still have quite a minute to turn on the TV. You have to really follow it and be able to present what you need to. I think they did a remarkable job in terms of could have been a very sad and bad situation into a good situation, as best as it can be. So also that young man has some suggestions for TPD on how some communications can be better in just in general terms. And he knows that those suggestions will be welcome, and once I get them, I'm going to be passing them along to the chain of command, up to and including Chief President. So again, it's something nice to say about the police department even after they beat me up, but that's okay.
Thank you. Okay, so item number 9, Sea Park vacancies. We've got a few. Item number 10, future agenda items.
Okay. Yes. I met with Ward 2, Council 8 yesterday, a couple of days, and they are extremely interested in filling that open slot. We haven't seen that filled in a while. And so I talked to them about what the disqualifications are, what the qualifications are. They have that in writing, and I also volunteered to have the chair or myself meet with any potential appointees so they can have a full appreciation of what's expected at Sea Park. They are looking to fill that seat as quickly as possible.
Do they have anyone in mind?
There are some names that have been suggested.
Okay. We have vacancy in
1, 2, 5. And soon 6.
Future agenda items. I'd be interested to know, since we talked about it a couple times, is like the latest training that you might be doing with regards to community members videotaping
you during an investigation? You know, how is that a little bit of the training that you use with your officers?
What's the name? Is it mid-April? The next week?
Yes, sir.
Let me look at my calendar. I'll have somebody.
Okay. Thank you. I will be in Portugal, so I'm going to be at the
Azores?
I'm going to the Azores.
Just Lisbon.
After the NCAA, I had to schedule it after.
Great. So we've got the future agenda item for April, and our April meeting is April 16th, and it will be here at the Ward 6 office in the community room, and we do have it available hybrid for anyone who would like to log on. If you want to log on from Portugal, you're more than welcome to. If not, you're by the beach. I get it. I think they'll cover it for me. So it is 6:41, and does anyone have anything else for the good of the cause?
Nope.
Nope, 6:41, and then meeting's open. Thank you.
Thank you.